Hello, I'm Mark Camacho. This is number 0794, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0794. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Michelle and Sean Kanan, who are the authors of Way of the Cobra Couples. How has this Hollywood couple managed to work together, and how did this lead to the book?
Sean and I have had a long, rich history of collaboration, so we work together all the time. We just had so many people telling us, you guys are just so great together, and what an unlikely couple, and you guys really seem to be very happy and have it all together. What's your secret?
Michelle and I worked together on Studio City. It was a great collaboration, and I knew I wanted to write something with Michelle. With the success of Way of the Cobra and the sequel, Welcome to the Kumite, it just seemed like a logical next step to write a book together about relationships.
Hugh Asher talks about tree hugging. He's a forest bathing guy. What exactly is forest bathing?
It's a nature mindfulness practice. So it's about going out into nature. It's most commonly done in forested or wooded areas, but going out into nature and slowing down really physically and mentally and noticing things through your different senses. And it's partly about noticing how being in nature makes you feel inside of you.
PR specialist Mickey Mickelson from Creative Edge Publicity, and full disclosure, he books a lot of guests on this show. How does one even get started in PR?
I was working in the corporate sector in the credit union industry, teaching lenders how to sell insurance coverages, setting up banking systems. One of my coworkers wrote a book, and previous to my corporate role, I worked at Indigo for a number of years, setting up special events. So me being who I am, I volunteered my time to help her get the word out. We got into some book signings. It was very, very successful. Next thing you know, other authors found out what I was doing, and they reached out to me because they knew me from my past experience at Indigo. Couldn't say no, I just kept helping people, so it became a business.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0794, was actor Mark Camacho, who has been in over 200 feature films and television shows, and he's also done a lot of voice work in dozens of cartoon series, and he's also a great director of voice talent as well. Thank you very much, Mark, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. ...42-year-old Mary Kay Bauer of St. Paul, Minnesota, was arrested on October 19th for wrestling and livestock theft, which is a felony. Officers were alerted to Bauer when she and a man were seen walking a sheep and a dog on leashes. Bauer told them that she purchased the sheep for $200, but her companion ratted her out. I guess he wasn't sheepishly following her lead. He said she stepped over a farm fence, put a leash on the sheep, and pulled it out through the fence. When police checked with the farm owner, they found out that Bauer had not paid for the animal, a breeding hare ram worth about $500. Bauer's tattoo might have given her away. She has a sheep inked on her left cheek. And before you ask, yeah, I'm talking about her face. She's a bad girl. Yep, everyone's a critic. On October 24th, emergency officials in Slauton, Wisconsin, contacted the County Public Health Agency after transporting five people with possible foodborne illness exposure. The common denominator? Famous Yeti's Pizza. But it wasn't tainted onions or bad cheese that sickened patrons. On October 22nd, a worker at Yeti's ran out of oil while making pizzas, so he visited a shared industrial kitchen nearby. The oil he grabbed was from food-grade hemp and contained Delta-9 cannabis, or THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. Said the health department, the oil can be used to make everything from cookies to condiments. Famous Yeti's served 60 contaminated pizzas, prompting dozens of reports of sickness. The restaurant closed for deep cleaning on October 25th. I hope nobody was caught driving under the influence of pizza. Also, pizza and stoners can lead to anarchy.
Four of the deviled cheese and sausage.
Right here, dude.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Mr. Spicoli, you're on dangerous ground here. You're causing a major disturbance on my time.
A 107-year-old Chinese woman named Chen has become a social media star because of an unusual facial feature, a 4-inch-long horn growing out of her forehead. Some viewers think that the growth is responsible for Chen's advanced age and are calling it a longevity horn. Doctors, however, say it's a cutaneous horn, which is often associated with prolonged sun exposure. Nevertheless, Chen remains in good health and eats heartily, and she has no intention of having the horn removed. Well, plus, I'm sure she's a hit with the neighborhood kids when they want to play ring toss. Medical offices have been struggling to figure out how to get information into patients' charts since doctors are often too busy to type things into charting software themselves or are poor typists. Enter artificial intelligence. OpenAI, which brought us ChatGPT, has introduced Whisper, an AI-powered transcription tool with near-human-level robustness and accuracy. While OpenAI warns the tool shouldn't be used in high-risk domains, desperate doctors and hospitals are buying in. Sure enough, Whisper includes hallucinations in its output, just like ChatGPT, including racial commentary, violent rhetoric, and often imagined medical treatments. Example, he, the boy, was going to, I'm not sure exactly, take the umbrella. Now that was translated as,
he took a big piece of a cross, a teeny, small piece. I'm sure he didn't have a terror knife, so he killed a number of people.
Yep, that's exactly what I said. A University of Michigan researcher tested Whisper and found that even in low-risk domains, public meetings, for instance, Whisper includes hallucinations in about 80% of transcriptions he has checked, even when the source audio recordings are clear. You know, it takes a computer doing these things for us to long for the days of terrible doctor handwriting. We haven't yet reached the Star Trek level of medicine.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
And let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Sean Kanan is an actor, writer, and producer. He was the creator of the digital series Studio City. That's when we last talked to him a few years ago. Most daytime viewers will best remember him for his role as Deacon Sharp on both The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful, and A.J. Quartermain on General Hospital. Well, he and his co-worker wife, Michelle, are also the authors of a new book called Way of the Cobra Couples. The Emmy-winning couple joins us via Zoom from California. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I'll start with Michelle because Michelle's name is on the book first. So,
as it should be.
How did this book come about and what does it entail?
So Sean and I have had a long, rich history of collaboration. So we work together all the time. And, you know, we just had so many people telling us, you know, you guys are just so great together. And what an unlikely couple. And you guys, you know, really seem to be very happy and have it all together. What's your secret? So in true Hollywood fashion, we decided to write our secret so that everybody could know how they too can have a relationship. Because one of the things that we really bonded over is that Sean and I really truly want everybody to be happy, and we want everybody to have a relationship like ours, where we feel supported and understood and, you know, just happy.
Well, it's interesting when couples work together, but it's also another level when you're forced to, because of writing this book, you're forced to examine how well you work together. So what was that like?
That's an interesting point. I mean, first of all, I don't feel like we were forced to. I mean, this was something that we absolutely wanted to do. Not to contradict Michelle's explanation for how this happened, but for me, you know, Michelle and I had worked together on Studio City. It was a great collaboration, and I knew I wanted to write something with Michelle. You know, Michelle's got her own career and she's busy, and me vying for her time is not always as easy as you might think. But with the success of Way of the Cobra and the sequel, Welcome to the Kumite, it just seemed like a logical, next step to write a book together about relationships, applying the philosophy and strategies from the first two books. As far as what you said about having to work together, you know, at the end of the book, I talk about how I went into this with a healthy dose of, not skepticism, that's the wrong word. I guess I was aware of potential pitfalls. I was aware of the fact that, you know, when you're writing a book about relationships, it does two things. It puts your relationship under the microscope for the people reading it, and it puts your relationship under the microscope for you and your partner writing it. And I think that ultimately it was a really positive experience. It allowed us to look at some stuff that maybe we need to work on. It allowed us to kind of take a victory lap for the things that, you know, we've been doing really well together, and just realize how far we've come and that we're just both committed to keeping on, keeping on, you know?
While other people suggested that maybe you write this book, was there any trepidation when you first were broached with this subject that you said for basically the reasons you just described, that you were any way hesitant to write the book?
I mean, not really, because when Sean and I first met, we kind of let it all hang out. We didn't really put on any airs, and we really just were at a point in our lives where we just were completely honest and probably, you know, flies in the face of relationship wisdom, but really did. So we really didn't have we don't have secrets from each other, and we right. know everything about each other. So in doing this, you know, it was more to kind of give people tools that we have and that we use in our relationship. Like in the book, we have the relationship rule book, and the relationship rule book is something that we started right from the get-go. And it's basically a list of agreed upon things, and you can write them down or you can just have them between each other. We prefer to write things down. I love making lists.
Well, you wrote them down somewhere, because I've never seen them.
Yes.
I got them in my head.
Yeah, I have them written down. They're on my iPad. Don't worry.
So who did you write the book for? And by that I mean, did you write it for people who are in couples, or do you write it for people who are looking for their soulmate, or both?
You just hit the nail on the head. The two exact different groups that we wrote it for. We wrote it for people that are already in relationships, looking to improve the relationship and take it to the next level. And we wrote it for people that are single and are tired of asking themselves, you know, why am I'm getting dates, but I'm not finding the person that, you know, I want to be with and be a part of a couple with. What am I doing wrong? And we're going to tell you, I don't like to use the word wrong, but some strategies and philosophy that will allow you to look at the endeavor of finding someone in a different way. Because, you know, as much as everybody would like to think that, you know, like rom-com meet cutes happen in real life serendipitously, and they do sometimes, but, you know, really meeting somebody who is going to be someone you're going to have a relationship with, it takes a little bit of intentionality. You know, you have to be putting out the vibration that that's what you're looking for. Because if you're putting out the vibration, hey, you know what? I want to date a bunch of people, don't want to get serious, want to have fun, and there's nothing wrong with that, that's what you're going to attract. But if you're putting out, you know, a vibe that I'm looking for somebody to have a serious, committed, monogamous relationship with, you're going to start attracting those kind of people and not people looking for the other thing.
Gotcha. Now, you spent a lot of years in soaps. You and Michelle have put together a digital series based on the world of soaps, Studio City. So, and now you've written this book, and I'm just curious to know, from your perspective, is life a soap opera or not? How do they compare?
I don't think so, but they say write what you know. So
yeah, I mean, you know, soap operas are based on a lot of subterfuge and duplicity, and you know, people betraying each other, and you know, it's crazy. You know, I'm married to Sheila Carter, who is arguably the most iconic female villain in soap opera history, and we have, you know, the most stable relationship. But most relationships in soaps are a ticking time bomb, just waiting for something to come along and explode them. Obviously, that's not what you want in your real life relationship. So
right.
Michelle and I try and have as little drama in our marriage and day-to-day life as possible.
I think we have an awesome outlet because we both are project creators. So we take the drama and we put it on the screen.
We like to get paid for our drama.
Right, exactly.
Oh, gee, now if I ever see another episode of Studio City, I'm going to be wondering, okay, which part is real? Which part are their lives?
Well, you know, it's not so much that it's our lives. Really, none of it is really our lives.
There's some in there.
But you know, it's kind of an amalgamation of my 30-plus years in daytime. You know, some of the characters are combinations of different people that I've encountered throughout the years, stories, things like that. And there's also a healthy dose of, you know, dramatization and
embellishment.
Yeah.
30 plus years in daytime. Now, in daytime, people can have very, very long careers. But when you first started 30 years ago, did you ever think you'd still be in daytime and that you'd be doing so well and thriving in the way that you are?
I'll be really honest. My first day on General Hospital, 1992, I was trying to get through the day. I had a tremendous amount of dialogue. I'd never done a soap before. And, you know, like I said, I was just looking at putting my, you know, the next foot forward, trying to get through the scene. It's hard to believe that next year is going to be my 25th year since beginning my role of Deacon Sharp on The Bold and the Beautiful. And that was 8 years after I started daytime.
I don't think it's hard
to
believe.
38 years.
I think that the soaps are really an American institution. I mean, they have soaps all over the world.
But I mean, I think it means for me. Not that soaps are still going, that I'm still a part of it. I mean, it's been a huge honor to be a part of an entertainment community for 38 years. I mean,
yeah.
The only thing that I can tell you that is on par with that is being able to come back and reprise my role of Mike Barnes on Cobra Kai after an even longer period, because I did that in 1988.
Wow. Well, congratulations on the book. The book is entitled Way of the Cobra Couples. And before I let you go, I know I asked you this before we were on the air, but I got to find out, is there going to be another season of Studio City? Because I just love that show.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, that's the plan. We very much want to make that happen.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Sean, Michelle, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Michelle and Sean Kanan, authors of Way of the Cobra Couples. You can go to our website at thestuffall.com to the show number for this program, which is show number 0794, and you'll find links to their website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order their book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on the Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll go to Scotland to talk about tree hugging and being at one with nature. Plus, Mickey Mickelson, a PR specialist from Creative Edge Publicity, will be on the program. And we also have an Idiot of the Day a little later on, and much more Stuff File news right here, right now. Meet Tisha Booth and Keisha Edom. The women were on a road trip to reconcile their relationship when they exited Interstate 85 in Livonia, Georgia last week. Following the duo's 7 p.m. pit stop, cops received a report of indecent exposure at the rear of the Raceway gas station. And I just realized, if I put the commas in different places, that's an entirely different sentence. Anyway, responding officers located a white female on top of a black female, and each of them had their pants pulled down, exposing their pelvic regions.
What the heck are those two doing in a tree?
No, they're not in a tree. The suspects were found on a patch of grass between the Raceway and a McDonald's restaurant. I'm loving it. Well, that's one way of putting it. 49-year-old Booth and 37-year-old Edom were arrested for public indecency and booked into the county jail on a misdemeanor charge. I hope to God they put them in separate cells. In a Facebook post, police recommended that if individuals were tempted to reconcile your relationship with your life partner, they should get a room or go home. Well, jail cell time is probably the break that they needed anyway.
We need rest. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is spongy and bruised.
Snow! Can't we just cuddle? No!
Thousands of people deceived by an AI-generated Pakistan-based website that quickly spread online lined the streets of Dublin, Ireland for a Halloween parade that didn't exist. The website, My Spirit Halloween, falsely promoted Mockness Halloween Parade, leading large swaths of people to gather on the streets. Mockness is a performing arts group that had staged Halloween parades in Dublin since 2013. The COVID-19 pandemic stopped those parades until last year, but the group had not scheduled one for 2024. Initial crowds were in the hundreds and appeared to swell into thousands, said Sinn Féin councillor Janice Boylan. It seems to be an online scam. It's really sad to see that people are being scammed. Everyone is trying to have a fun and safe Halloween. Having a parade to go to sounded really good. The thousands who showed up waited for about an hour before it dawned on them that there was no parade. They gathered on O'Connell Street near Parnell Street in Dublin's city center. The hoax claimed the parade would start there and end at Christchurch Cathedral. As they began trying to clear the streets, the Irish police force put out a statement that said, "Please be advised that contrary to information being circulated online, no Halloween parade is scheduled to take place in Dublin city centre this evening or tonight." The website that touted the fake parade appeared to have removed the listing the next morning. You know, it's really sad how some people are using AI. At least in this case, they only rob people of their time, not their money or possessions. But they did tug on the heartstrings of many. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles said it best.
Halloween parade, bro. I always wanted to be in the Halloween parade. It's like the one night of the year where we fit in.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, A zoo in England is asking members of the public to be on the lookout for four female raccoons that escaped from the facility. The Amazon World Zoo Park, near Sandown on the Isle of Wight, said the raccoons managed to escape their enclosure late Thursday night or Friday morning. Said zoo officials on social media, "If you have a sighting, please do not approach them. They are not aggressive, but will be scared." Officials asked nearby residents to check sheds and bonfire pits as the animals sleep during the day and become active at dusk. Rowena Welsh, a supervisor at the zoo, said the search had been launched for the masked fugitives. She said, "They are new here. Everyone is out searching, and we have tracker dogs and drones looking for them." Okay. I live in North America, where raccoons are abundant, so I gotta ask, why are they in zoos in the UK? Raccoons are considered an invasive species in the UK and are banned from being kept as pets. They were introduced to Europe in the mid-20th century for the pet, fur, and zoo trades, and have since escaped into the wild. Again, why are they in zoos?
You see what the raccoon's doing? He's playing head games. He wants to divide and conquer us. We have to hang together, stay strong.
Just get rid of it.
Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program. A little while ago, I saw a news story about the Scottish tree-hugging championships. That caught my attention. Then I learned that each year in Finland, there is a World Tree-Hugging Championship. The annual event takes place 100 miles inside the Arctic Circle in Lapland. In doing a deeper dive, I learned about something called forest bathing, which is part of green health activities, and I definitely had to find out more. So joining us is Hugh Asher, who is a forest bathing guide. He joins us via Zoom from Scotland. Hi, Hugh.
Hello, Peter.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us. Now, what exactly is forest bathing, and what is the role of a forest bathing guide?
Well, forest bathing really is it's a nature mindfulness practice. So it's about going out into nature. It's most commonly done in forested or wooded areas, but going out into nature and slowing down really physically and mentally and noticing things through your different senses. So it's about taking time to look around and notice what you can see. And at this time of year, it may well be the changing color of the leaves, noticing what you can hear. So this might be the wind in the trees, it might be running water, it might be bird song. You might spend some time noticing what you can feel, and this could be either externally, so it might be the sun on your face, the wind, the difference in feeling that you get between the clothed parts of your body and the parts of your body that aren't closed. And it's partly about noticing how being in nature makes you feel inside of you. It's a practice that started really in Japan in the 1980s, building really on Japanese culture, which is very closely associated with nature connection through Buddhism and Shinto, really. And at the time in the early 1980s, Japan was going through a massive tech boom, massive increases in urbanization. People were moving from the rural areas to the cities. And this was accompanied by a sharp upturn in mental health problems. And the beginning of what was labeled in Japan as a concept called karyoshi, which translated roughly as work-related death. So it was people were becoming very stressed. There was an increase in people having strokes and heart attacks and things in the workplace. And so the director of the Japanese Forestry Agency conceptualized this idea that he labeled Shinrin-yoku, which means bathing in the forest atmosphere, really. And probably about 20 years ago, a guy from California called Amos Clifford really probably pioneered bringing forest bathing to the West and started an organization called the Association for Nature and Forest Therapists. And from there, it's really developed all around the world as a what we often call a salutogenic health practice. So this is a health practice that's focused mainly on keeping people healthy rather than responding to poor health.
Okay, so it's relatively recent, as you, if you say it's in, it only started in the 1980s. So again, what is a forest bathing guide, which you are, and how did you get involved in all of this?
So a forest bathing guide is somebody who leads a forest bathing walk. So this could be anywhere from between about 1 and 15 participants. And during the walk, I encourage people to slow down. And I offer what are often called nature connection invitations. So these are suggested nature connection activities. We phrase them as being invitations because people don't have to do them. They don't have to complete them. They can choose not to do them. They can choose to do something else, or they can choose to do the parts that resonate with them. So really, the role of the guide is to encourage people to slow down and to facilitate them gaining the greatest amount of benefit out of the activities. It sounds in a way like something that people do all the time, but there's a difference really between being in nature and connecting with nature. You can be out, you know, on a daily walk in nature, trying to see how quickly you can walk around a lake or a trail or something, and spend the entire time what I would call in your head. So it's about people quite often have an internal dialogue, and they think about what's happened at work today, what they're going to have for tea, and they don't really notice what's going on around them. And the goal is often sort of geographical or time-based, whereas on a forest bathing walk, it's about achieving a state of mind, really, rather than anything else. From my point of view, even as a forest bathing guide, I still like being taken out by other people. So I have a network of other guides, and we sometimes guide each other because it's very difficult, really, to fully connect with nature while you're still holding the reins, if that makes sense. Whereas if I give the responsibility for guiding the activity to somebody else, I can really just immerse myself in the activity. You'd asked how I came to this point. In sort of late 2019, 2020, I was working within mental health, and I did a little bit of work with a local countryside ranger around nature walks for well-being. And then COVID struck, and what I found really helped me was spending time in nature, engaging in an activity that I later discovered was called Sit Spot, which was just about sitting in nature and going through my different senses. So spending a few minutes looking, noticing what I could see, closing my eyes, noticing what I could hear. And this really, really helped me. And it was then when I started looking at what it was I was doing that I discovered that this really was a thing, and it was called forest bathing, and it had health benefits, and I became really evangelical about it and spent the first 6 months really of COVID doing webinars and writing suggested nature connection invitations, which I shared on social media. Over here in the UK, we had what some people might consider was a bit of a harsh lockdown. People were generally only allowed to leave their houses for an hour a day to go out and exercise. And so what I was trying to do was encourage people to use this hour a day to mindfully connect with nature, to help their health and well-being, both mental and physical, at a time when I really felt people needed as much help with their mental health as they could get. So that was kind of how I got into it. And I became such a big believer in it that I then trained as a forest bathing guide and subsequently what we might call a forest therapy practitioner. The difference really being that forest bathing is about trying to maintain good health, and forest therapy is applying it to support with people with specific difficulties. So it might be mental health. I have a background in drug and alcohol work, and so my main focus now is in using Nature Connection to support people in recovery from problematic drug and alcohol use.
It sounds like what you described earlier about the whole idea of, you know, not just simply taking a jog through the forest and not really paying attention to what's going on. It sounds like the old adage of stop and smell the roses, basically.
Absolutely. It is just really about stopping and slowing down and noticing what's going on around you. If you try doing it somewhere where you're familiar with going for a walk and you end the experience thinking, I've seen things, I've noticed things that I've never noticed before, then you're probably doing it right.
Okay. Well, we've got just about a minute or so to go here, and we haven't talked at all about the Scottish Tree Hugging Championship. So what exactly is required in a tree hugging championship?
Well, we have three rounds as per the Finnish World Championship rules. So the first round is speed hugging, which is most trees hugged in a minute, minimum of 5 seconds per hug. This really is a bit like an icebreaker. It tends to get people going and they feel less conscious in the second two rounds, which are dedication and freestyle. So dedication is about emotional connection with a tree. It's about appearing comfortable. And the freestyle round is really anything goes. Use your imagination and come up with something creative.
Well, excellent. And you have an organization. Tell us about the name of the organization, because I just want to make sure I get it correct. I know that there are different pronunciations in Scotland. So what exactly is the organization that you deal with and the forest that you work in?
So is it Andarach Forest Therapy that you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So Andarach means the oak in Scots Gaelic. And my house and where I'm based is just above an ancient Atlantic oak wood. So oak features quite significantly in my life and in my location. And also I quite like the concept of, from tiny acorns, mighty oak trees grow.
Absolutely. Well, I got to admit, when I first started looking at this, I'm thinking Scottish Tree Hugging Championships. How freaky or odd is that? But the more I dug into it, the more interesting it seemed. And I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to talk to us about it and the organization as a whole and what this therapy actually is. So thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter.
Hugh Asher, a forest bathing guide in Scotland. You can visit our website at thestuffall.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0794, and you'll find links to their website where you can find out all about their organization and its therapeutic benefits. Plus, you can also learn a little about the Tree Hugging Championships. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Here's a brief word about our show and my book. If you become a regular Patreon patron of the Stuff File program, I'll give you an e-version of my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. It's easy to do. Just go to patreon.com and become a patron to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. So, join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Sign up at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to Mickey Mickelson from Creative Edge Publicity about being a publicist. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And we have more in Stuff File News right here, right now. Anguilla, an island nation in the Caribbean, is only 35 square miles with fewer than 16,000 inhabitants, but it's getting a huge influx of cash thanks to the internet top-level domain it was assigned back in 1995. That assignment? AI. Now very attractive for companies offering artificial intelligence tools. The fee the country gets from registrations has risen to around 20% of all government revenues and is paying for expanding the island's airport, a new Votech hub at its high school, and free medical care for seniors. The government has just switched out the registration system from one created by a local techie to one run by a U.S. company now that there are more than 533,000 AI domains, up from around 53,000 just 4 years ago. Said Premier Ellis Webster, "You can't predict how long this is going to last. I don't want to have our economy and our country and all our programs just based on this, and suddenly there's a new fad, and then we are left having to make significant expenditure cuts." Yeah, now that's a smart politician who is not putting all of his eggs in one basket, nor is he counting his eggs before they hatch. Meanwhile, Antigua must really be upset because it settled for AG as their domain moniker. Well, who knows? Maybe the agriculture sector of the world will explode online some way, shape, or form, and Antigua will benefit. Or maybe not. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? One of the things that I love about this job is the relationships you cultivate over the years, not just with guests that we talk to, but also the people who offer up their clients to be guests on the show. I've had some PR bookers that I've dealt with now for almost 40 years, and they're not just colleagues, but also friends. One of the newest, which means that I've only dealt with him for about a half a decade, is Mickey Mickelson of Creative Edge. I thought that since I talk to a lot of people on the show from various walks of life, talking about their careers, that I'd talk to someone in PR to hear about their origin story. So Mickey joins us via Skype from Alberta. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. We talk all the time, but never on the air. So, and I saw an interview that you were interviewed in, and I thought, gee, you know, I know a lot about Mickey, but I don't know his origin story. So how did you get into PR in the first place?
I was working in the... First and foremost, I want to say thank you for having me. This is such an extreme pleasure. But I was working in the corporate sector in the credit union industry, actually, on the road 5 days a week, teaching lenders how to sell insurance coverages, setting up banking systems. One of my coworkers wrote a book, and previous to my corporate role, I worked at Indigo for a number of years, setting up special events. So me being who I am, I volunteered my time to help her get the word out. We got into some book signings, both in Alberta and in Winnipeg, where she lives. It was very, very successful. Next thing you know, other authors found out what I was doing, and they reached out to me because they knew me from my past experience at Indigo. And thus, Creative Edge was born because I couldn't say no. I just kept helping people, so it became a business.
So basically, you're the accidental PR person.
Yep. Absolutely. That's a good way to do it. It fell in my lap. Didn't go to school for it, didn't do anything like that. It was a test run, and we became successful. So,
well, you know, yeah. There's a lot of people, and broadcasters included, by the way, there's a lot of people, actors, broadcasters, who go into PR after being in their previous business, and I guess they don't realize until later, looking back at it, that, my gosh, what I've done in the past has actually led to this.
Yeah, it's the same thing with me. And in fact, Creative Edge, we use the basis of the credit union system in terms of grassroots community, family networking. smaller scale leveraging platforms. We used all of that to be successful, and we have over 100 clients now. It's crazy.
Amazing. Now, what did Little Mickey want to do when he grew up? And I know that Little Mickey was also into comic books. I want to talk about that.
Little Mickey wanted to be Batman, but Junior Mickey wanted to go to radio and television arts, which never ended up happening. So I ended up going to Nate and got a business diploma instead, and that led to sales, and that led to this. So, yeah.
So what is it that you enjoy about being a publicist? Because it's not an easy life.
The passion of it. You know, you see the glow, or you talk to a writer you represent, and you get them on a show, and they're just like, you got me on this? Wow. Like, the passion and belief behind it. And I represent both indie authors. I represent a couple of musicians. I represent traditional authors as well. And the reaction I get every single time when it's a good interview or a good review or a good podcast or just a good semblance of that, the appreciation is there, Peter. And that's what I live for every single day. I mean, my clients will tell you, I'm up at 4 a.m. and I don't go to bed till midnight a lot of days. And most of the time I'm working through that. And the reason I do that is because, number one, I love the people I work with, but I love the book industry and I love the media affiliates I work with as well. So I don't see this as a job. I see this as more just a passion and something that I love doing, and I get paid money for it. So it's a win-win.
You say you love the book industry. Are you yourself a voracious reader?
I'm starting to be. I've been a voracious reader of comic books for a long, long time, but I'm starting to get into books as well and just investing in the words on the page and getting into the stories and the characters. It's almost like a brand new world, although I've been doing this for 8 years, but I'm just starting to see the light around like actual novels rather than just like pictures and words on a page.
Okay. So we've mentioned comics several times and you just brought it up. So let's do the deep dive. What was your interest in comics? And you know, there are a lot of people who read comics these days, although as adults, we tend to call them graphic novels because comics seem to be something for kids, which is not necessarily the case. So how did you embrace your comic-loving interest as an adult?
I used comics as a way to escape reality when reality bogged you down. We all have stuff going on emotionally, physically, things we have to struggle with, things we're challenged with, things that we're celebrating. And comic books take you away from that for a little while, and it actually helps you cope with those things. When you get into looking at the captions on the page, and you're reading the storylines, and they're intricate, and they're not just CJack run, but they're actual talking about processes and things like that, it's a really good way to escape reality, but also a good way to cope with a lot of things you have going on. And that's where I found my love with them. And now books are starting to do that as well.
You mentioned Batman earlier. Is that your favorite comic book? And if not, what is?
Dark Knight all the way. Batman is definitely my favorite superhero in the world. My favorite comic line would be the 1950s EC comics from the 50s. Tales from the Crypt, Weird Science, Two-Fisted Tales, all that. They're just brilliant, brilliantly written, brilliantly drawn. And at that time, brilliantly marketed, which is, again, another thing for me.
Everyone who grew up having comic book collections usually has a story about their mother throwing their stash of comics out. Do you have one of those?
I don't. I actually sold my comic collection to help pay for funeral costs for my stepfather. So I helped from that aspect, but I collected them over the years and was a smart investor that got some key books. And then I used them to help my family out. So it was a win-win from that aspect too.
Did you build up your collection since then, or do you still collect them? Or
I collect digital copies. So I have about 4,500 on my tablet, key books notwithstanding, but I get to do other stories and still have them in some way, shape, or form, but I could never buy back what I had because, well, I don't have $1 million today.
Okay. Well, let's go back to your PR days, to your PR business, and that is, who was your first client, and what have your biggest moments been in the short 8 years that you've been doing this?
My first client, her name was Miranda Oh. She wrote a book called Chin Up, Tits Out. She's out of Winnipeg. I worked with her in the corporate world for a number of years. And she's the one that got me started. She's the one that, you know, I helped, and it just steamrolled from there. A big moment for me, I actually represent New York Times bestseller Tosca Lee, and I got her on the Beautiful Writers podcast hosted by Linda Silverstone. She was co-billed with people like Tom Hanks, Lee Child. I believe Dean Koontz was on there as well. But pre-COVID, Tosca's episodes were actually broadcast through all the American airlines because Linda had leveraged that. So people traveling were able to watch Tosca's interview on airplanes and such going to their destinations. So that was a big win.
Now, again, when you say you first started, you were dealing with somebody who you knew and you were just basically helping them. What was the relationship like with other clients when you decided to do this full time, and especially clients you didn't necessarily know beforehand? Because, you know, you had a relationship with your first client, so therefore you were kind of invested in her personally. But what was it like when you were meeting somebody new?
So for the first 6 months, I was learning. I didn't have media contacts. I didn't know how to write press releases. I didn't know how to properly network in the industry. So anybody I signed, and I was in Calgary and was mostly local people, I didn't charge them a fee for the first 6 months. I didn't want them to pay for something that may not have been a value for them. So I wanted to see if I could do it, and I didn't charge any income for the first six months in the industry. Then I started charging, and we just started building up. And as the journey went through this 8 years later, I think I'm a good publicist. I have a lot of media relationships. I have a lot of media contacts. I have solid clients. The experiment worked, but in my opinion, you don't want to take money from somebody for something if you don't really know what you're doing yet. And I want to thank those people who put faith in me, because really they put their brands in my hands and let me do what I needed to do. And there were some mistakes made. There were some challenges made. There were some great things that we also did. But if I wouldn't have had that opportunity, we wouldn't be where we are today. So I thank them for that.
Now, I've noticed that you said the word we several times. I use the word we also, but sometimes that's the royal we. Are you a one-man shop, or is there a we?
I am a one-man shop with Creative Edge. I do have a business affiliate in Houston, Texas, who works with me with a number of different clients. Her name is Amy Ravichandran. She owns an award-winning social media and bookmarking firm called Abundantly Social. We meet every day, and we are always in communication with the clients that we share jointly, but I am still a one-man show today. I use the word we a lot because I see my clients as part of this, and we're more like a team rather than just a client-publicist relationship. That's how I word it.
Well, I understand that completely. I you know, this show is on a lot of radio stations. That's the we.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing, right, Peter? I mean, to me and you, we're a we as well. That's how I look at things. So.
Absolutely. And you mentioned before, you talked about the idea of you didn't know whether you did good press releases or not. I can say emphatically, having done this for about 40 years, I'm getting a lot of press releases every day. Your press releases are one of the best. I look forward to you do a monthly press release. You do a monthly press release, and I look forward to that every month.
Oh, thank you so much. And I mean, the relationship is twofold. I appreciate your support too. You've done a lot for us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go unwarranted, believe me.
Well, again, congratulations on all that you do. Sorry that you had to sell your comic book collection. I saw an interview that you were in recently that I thought, gee, I got to call Mickey and have him on the show. So I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you again, Peter. It's always a pleasure, and I just appreciate this as well today. It was wonderful.
Mickey Mickelson from Creative Edge Publicity. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0794, and you'll find the link to Mickey's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man was charged with reckless burning for letting a fire in Plainfield, Connecticut grow out of control. 57-year-old Brian Connolly was taken into custody. At around 3:55 p.m., police received multiple calls about smoke coming from the area. By about 4:05 p.m., while officers conducted patrol checks of the area, they saw heavy smoke coming from a backyard. When they arrived at the home, they saw a roughly 50-square-foot brush fire in the backyard around a fire pit. The fire had destroyed a 40 to 50-foot section of vinyl fence. It also damaged a neighbor's lawn, shrubbery, and other gardening tools. The fire department arrived by 4:15 to put the fire out. Officers made contact with the resident, who told them that her husband had been in the backyard having a fire but had left to go to the store. Police said Connolly returned home a short time later. He told them that he had been trying to light the fire but could not get it to light, so he then just left to go to the store. Through the investigation, police said they determined that Connolly made no attempts to wet the fire pit to prevent it from spreading before he left it unattended. They also noted that a state of Connecticut emergency burn ban went into effect on October 26th. The ban was put in place due to the state's dry conditions. Connolly was taken into custody. He has a Superior Court date for November the 12th. Now, why, oh why, would you light a backyard fire, leave it unattended to go to the store, during a time when there is a statewide emergency call banning outdoor fires in the first place? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0794. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0794. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Spoutable, Mastodon, and Blue Sky as PA Holder. Check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including kdxradio.com, over the air on World FM in New Zealand, WLSLLPFM in Dade City, Florida, KZZHLPFM in Eureka, California, CKUWFM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, Local 107.3 FM in St. John, CHSR in Fredericton, CFQR 600 in Montreal, and also streaming on just about any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this burning question: how come birds aren't tickled by feathers?